Shakespeare's Improbable Journey to Inner Mongolia by Richard Eisenberg. During the last week of December 2006, the Inner Mongolia Normal University presented its first ever production of a Shakespeare play. With just 8 weeks of preparation, Romeo and Juliet nonetheless proved to be a gratifying success for the school's English department, the talented cast of ethnic Han and Mongolian English majors, and the two young directors, Shang Zhuling and Wang Jinjin. However, in an improbably indirect way, the triumph really belonged to a long-deceased teacher. In the 1960s, William Tunis was the most revered and feared English teacher at Kennedy High School in Montgomery County, Maryland. He was the first man I had ever met with a full beard, and he had honed to razor sharpness his intellectual and verbal repertoire at Harvard and Iowa State. While he was not physically imposing, he had a presence that commanded instant respect. Though he rarely raised his voice, his diction was so clear and precise that it could easily be heard across a noisy auditorium, especially when he admonished someone with the threat of serving his head up on a platter. His methods were a strange brew of traditional and innovative practices. We were always seated in a boy-girl checkerboard pattern and lectured regularly on avoiding his carefully prepared list of odious mistakes. We were all eager to please him, but terrified when we were actually assigned to one of his classes. But most of all, Mr. Tunis was a Shakespearean. Each year he took a group of gangly suburban adolescents and turned them into passionate, brooding, swashbuckling characters. King Lear, Hamlet, Richard III, somehow he was able to draw great characters out of a bunch of ordinary high school kids. It was quite remarkable, and he was very much a local legend for it. His career and life were cut short by a tragic accident in the spring of 1970, the year of my graduation. I was never part of the group of so-called bohemian intellectuals who gravitated toward Mr. Tunis and populated the English office. Quite the contrary, I was a quiet jock and spent most of my time avoiding English in any form. Because I grew up dyslexic in the days before special education, I had learned well how to avoid exposure and how to live down embarrassment. The kind of intellectual rigor represented by Mr. Tunis was what I spent most of my time trying to dodge. However, I was not entirely successful, and consequently, he was able to slip me two gifts of immeasurable value. The first was in eighth grade, when he required his students to read outside books. I was essentially a non-reader who struggled even with the required texts. Whether or not he recognized it as such, Mr. Tunis's gift was to allow me to read something I was interested in, regardless of its literary status. For me, that turned out to be the fantasy paperbacks with garish covers that were becoming popular at that time. I started with the short stories of Robert E. Howard, creator of the Conan character, and worked my way up to Tolkien. These were the first books that I had ever been encouraged to read that could sustain my interest long enough for me to undertake the laborious effort of reading them. Mr. Tunis somehow knew that, for students like me, reading anything was better than reading nothing. His second gift to me didn't come until my senior year. Students like me spent most of our time learning to write as little as possible, thus minimizing our mistakes. Somehow Mr. Tunis was able to discern the faintest whisper of a voice between the spelling errors in my writing. He was the first teacher in my school career who valued what students had to say rather than simply the mechanics of saying it. He encouraged us to think first and clean up the errors later. His focus on meaning made the dozens of subsequent trips to the dictionary worthwhile. So my school experience was saved pretty much at the last minute, in large part because of a little bit of attention and encouragement that came my way from Mr. Tunis. Had it not been for that, I doubt that I would have mustered the confidence to continue my academic life. A few years later, when I entered upon my own teaching career, I was heavily in his debt. The opportunity to repay that debt did not come until almost 20 years later. One of the young girls in my sixth grade class in rural Vermont noticed copies of Romeo and Juliet on my bookshelf. She talked some of her girlfriends into reading it with her, and a few weeks later, they approached me to ask if we could perform the play. Now, this was not as outrageous a proposal as it might seem, because for over a decade, my class had done at least 2 theater productions each year. While it had never occurred to me to attempt Shakespeare with 11-year-olds, they were persistent, as only little girls dreaming of playing Juliet can be. I found an abridged version of the play, added back many of the important speeches, and we went into production. That first Shakespeare play in 1991 was a success and became an annual tradition. There are many good reasons for doing Shakespeare with children, but among them is that there is such a rich variety to choose from. Each class in a small school is different, but there always seems to be a play that fits the personality of the class. Within a few years, the tradition of Shakespeare for sixth graders was well enough established that second and third graders approached me on the playground to ask which play they would be doing when they got to sixth grade. You cannot fully appreciate the magic of theater until you see a class of kindergartners sit in rapt wonder through an 80-minute performance of Macbeth as interpreted by their schoolmates. Each time I introduced a new group of students to Shakespeare, I felt I was paying another installment on the debt I owed Mr. Tunis. When I became principal of my school, at the urging of Jim Lombardo, our superintendent, I got involved in the University of Vermont's Asian Studies Outreach Program and attended the 2004 Sino-American Seminar on Educational Leadership held in Huhot, the capital city of China's Inner Mongolia Autonomous Region. A delegation of administrators from Vermont and Pennsylvania met with leaders from that part of China to discuss education reform and innovation. More important for me, I fell in love with the students at the university that hosted us, Inner Mongolia Normal University. Their kindness and eagerness to learn were infectious, and I knew before I left that I wanted to come back to teach. 2 years later, that opportunity came, when I retired from my school and arranged to return to teach for the fall 2006 semester. During the intervening 2 years, I had kept in touch with several people at the university, so when I arrived, the head of the English department knew I had a theater background. It just happened that the school had been invited to participate in a national Shakespeare competition, and the department head wanted me to work with 2 young teachers to produce a scene from The Merchant of Venice to be videotaped and mailed to Hong Kong in 2 weeks. The teachers had already chosen the scene and the cast, so we got right to work. Mostly through extraordinary effort, the students were able to learn the lines and we blocked the scene, rented some lovely dresses, and caught it all on film in time for the deadline. While this was a good first effort, it was not entirely satisfying, and the thought of doing a full Shakespearean production began to take shape. Now, it is no small feat to take on Shakespeare with students who speak English as a second or even third language in a school with no theater tradition and in a limited time. But it's hard to resist the enthusiasm that comes from doing something different and creating opportunities where none had existed. What's more, there was strong support from within the department to go ahead. The choice of play was easy. Romeo and Juliet is the best known of Shakespeare's plays, and, as I learned quickly, its themes speak loudly to the Chinese students. Almost all of them are in the midst of their first forays into romance, and there is a charming innocence about boyfriends and girlfriends among Chinese university students. These romances are also frequently complicated by the extreme pressure the students feel from their families to succeed academically. Many families make extraordinary sacrifices to send their children to school, and young people in China do not take duty to their families lightly. So Romeo and Juliet might have been written for a Chinese setting, and it proved to be a perfect choice. Our production was delayed because of an important departmental evaluation by the Ministry of Education, so we had just 2 months to mount the entire production so that it would not interfere with the exams at the end of the semester. Again, with a talented and eager cast, the play took shape and opened on schedule. We gave two very respectable performances. And while it might not have been the first time Romeo and Juliet was performed in Mongolian dress, it looked beautiful and rang true for the actors and the audience. As the two young teacher directors and I walked back to the teacher's dormitory, we critiqued our efforts. I stressed that it was not important that we achieve a professional level of performance. The mission of the university is to train future teachers, and theater is an excellent way for students to practice spoken English, to develop the speaking voice they will need in their classrooms, and to learn about English literature and culture. The important thing was that everyone had a positive experience, and perhaps decades from now, one of these future teachers will mount a production of a Shakespeare play, too. Wang Jinjin said, "It's like planting seeds." It is not my purpose to extol the virtues of performing Shakespeare. Far more gifted writers have preceded me in that. Rather, I want to emphasize that we are privileged to work in a profession that cannot foresee all the outcomes of our efforts. While sometimes our work seems as predictable as planting rows of corn, it can also be like scattering wildflower seeds to the wind. We have no idea where they may land, take root, and blossom. Certainly, 40 years ago, Mr. Tunis could never have imagined that one of the seeds he planted would bring his beloved Shakespeare to a stage in Inner Mongolia. We all have much to give and much to pay back, and we are all the richer for such a world of wonderfully improbable possibilities.